Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. David Alter here, filling in for the vacationing Roger Lajoie, who just enjoyed the Royal Ascot over in England. Joined with me, as always, Tom Tebbett. It is Aces, bringing you the very best in on and off the court tennis knowledge and news. And Tom, a very big week for some of the qualifiers going on right now. Wimbledon starting up next week, but a lot of Canadians vying for some top spots and trying to, you know, make a name for themselves going forward in one of the most prestigious tennis tournaments in the entire world.
Yeah, it's a big deal if you can get through the main draw. You get some points, which obviously helps your ranking. But roughly, I'd say if you lose in the first round, you get $20,000. So it can help the financial aspect as well. So we've got Alexandra Wozniak actually got a bit of her match in today. She lost the first set, won the second against Nina Brachikova from Russia. So they'll be resuming tomorrow if the weather's good. I understand the forecast isn't even that good for tomorrow. And then Stephanie Dubois did not play today. She's playing Vitalia Dyatchenko from Russia. And Frank Dancevic, the same thing. He didn't get his match on. He's playing Marco Crugnola from Italy. So it's a big deal. Actually, Frank's an interesting case because he qualified for the Australian, he qualified for the French, and now he's hoping to qualify. He's in the final round for Wimbledon, so that would really be great if you could make it into all three so far this year.
It certainly would be, and we should mention the segment of Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada. To get up-to-the-minute tennis news and scores, visit lovemeansnothing.ca. Tennis is spoken here. So, Tom, I understand you had a chance to talk to Anna Ivanovic going into a big major. Obviously, there's a lot on the line for her. What can we expect from your conversation with her from a couple of days ago?
Well, she's a very charming person. She's a well-spoken person, and also she's a very attractive person, very popular person in tennis. So it was great to talk to her, and nice of her to have the time for Aces, and here's what happened.
This time of year, of course, everybody's talking about Wimbledon and playing on grass. How do you feel about playing on grass compared to playing on clay and playing on hard courts?
Grass is a lot different than playing on a hard court or clay. It requires a different kind of movement, and everything happens sort of a little bit faster than on a normal surface. But it's a lot of fun, you know. It can bring the best out of you and sometimes the worst, you know. But it takes a lot of adjustments, but service is a huge factor in grass court tennis, and, you know, trying to stay low and use different muscles. So it does take a little preparation to be in your best shape to play on grass.
And how do you change your game on grass?
Well, I think that the movement is the first thing, because we come off clay courts to play onto grass, and on clay you can slide and you have a little bit more solid support than on the grass. It's a lot more, the points are a lot shorter, so it's a lot more explosive and also a lot more loading. So it puts a lot of pressure on the glutes and legs. So it is very important to work on those, you know, and try to stay strong and use that power for the first shot, because it's very important to start dominating from the first point on grass.
Obviously, Wimbledon is what everybody aims for eventually in this preparation running up to the tournament. Do you remember the first time you saw Wimbledon, and what was your reaction?
Well, I don't remember so much watching it on TV, you know, as growing up in Serbia, the tennis wasn't as sport, so they only showed some matches, and mostly they just showed Monica Seles. So I don't remember so much of Wimbledon as a kid, but I do remember obviously the first few times I played as a junior, and actually one of the years I reached finals. So it was a great memory for me, and I think my game is grass really well, so it is very special, and I think a lot of players find it very, very thrilling just having opportunity to be there and compete.
What's special about the grounds and the center court and just the feeling of being inside Wimbledon?
It's a lot different. I mean, every Grand Slam it's very special, but Wimbledon is different. You know, you have to play in white. There is a lot of tradition to it. In the court is different because obviously there is no commercials around. So it is a special feeling, you know, and the crowds are very proper, and it's different than let's say, you know, it's open. So I think for players, some players find it strange, but I think it's amazing, and it's definitely very special.
You mentioned that you have to play in white, obviously, and you're, I think, fairly interested in fashion. How important is fashion to you as part of just generally the whole preparation for playing tennis and for being a professional tennis player?
For me, it's most important to feel comfortable in what I wear when I'm on a court. You know, when you're competing, you don't want to think if, you know, if something is too tight or not. But Adidas has been created great stuff for us. So I'm very, very happy. But girls do get more and more interested in fashion and sort of designing things themselves.
I'm going to ask you a very tough question because every player has their own clothing company. But of all the other players, whose fashion statements and whose sort of fashion style and the way they carry things off, of all the other women players, would there be one that really impresses you?
Well, I think it's because lots of the designs are just by the company. So, you know, there are a few that are different. Like, for example, Matic Sense, she always has her own style, you know, with the longer socks and so on. And she always brings a little edge to the game. And it's different, you know, it is different than what we are used to seeing. But I think it's great that she can bring her own style to the court.
And what do you have in store for, you have to wear white, obviously, at Wimbledon. Do you have anything special involved for this year's tournament?
I have a really nice dress this year. Adidas has done a great job with designing new dress for this year. And I hope people will like it, but I guess you have to wait and see.
And can I ask you just a couple of questions about your strokes? You have a very powerful serve. Did that come naturally, or would you say there's some coach who had an influence on making your serve so strong?
I think some parts of it has to do with the technique, but no, I think it's natural. And when I grew up, I was watching a lot of Monica Seles matches because they were the only ones they were pretty much showing on the TV in Serbia. So she always had a powerful game, so I tried to copy that. So since I was very, very young, I tried to hit the ball as hard as I can.
And I guess that's the same for your forehand because you have a very, very strong forehand as well.
Yes, definitely. I tried to copy her in that sense. And you know, I'm pretty lucky that I'm a tall girl and quite strong, so I can generate lots of pace.
Can I ask you a few questions about Novak?
Sure.
How do you explain the way he's... I mean, obviously, a disappointment losing in the semifinals of the French Open, but how do you explain the way he seems to have gone up a level this year?
I think it's amazing what he's done. It's very hard to imagine for a player to go, you know, so long, you know, winning and so confident also. And I'm so happy to see him do well because we're great friends and we know each other since the childhood. So, you know, I really kept asking him, you know, like, what are you drinking? What are you eating? Give me your secret. You know, I want a bit of your, you know, game and confidence. But I think everyone admires him for what he's done this year already.
You played with Novak at Hopman Cup back in January, a couple of weeks for the Australian Open. Could you tell then that his level had gone up, that he was playing so well?
Yeah, you know, I could see in his body language he was a lot more relaxed, but yet so confident. And you know, it was the beginning of the season, but he was playing really well, which also, you know, explains after winning Davis Cup, it always boosts up your energy. So, you know, it was good to see him in a good spirit and you know, obviously to make that great run after that.
You were at the Australian Open final, and I gather the celebration afterward was pretty unusual. I think there was a band in the locker room, and then all the Serbians were having a good time. Do you recall that, and was that as exceptional as it sounded?
Actually, I didn't witness any of that. I watched the match, but then I left because I was training and preparing for Pattaya, so I didn't stay long after the match. But, you know, I'm sure they had a great time and celebrated in style.
Right. Last week you played Rebecca Marino, the Canadian. You won fairly easily, but I'm sure a lot of Canadians would like to know what you thought about her game.
She has lots of potential. She's a great young player. I think she has the height and big serve, and you know, I think she can still develop a lot in her game. But she definitely has the good potential, and we're going to see a lot more of her in the future.
And since you've been playing on the tour, I think you turned pro in 2003. How would you say the game has changed?
The game, if I can say, it got a lot faster, you know, if it's possible. So, because, you know, girls are getting more powerful, and with technology and rackets and strings, everything is happening a lot faster. And, you know, there is a lot of younger players coming up and playing extremely well and putting pressure on the top players. So I think it's great to see these changes in a game. And, you know, it challenges us a lot more, which is very good as well.
You have lots of fans all around the world. Sometimes you ever feel a little bit of pressure because of that, and you'd like to be even a little bit less popular because everybody is always sort of cheering for you, and maybe you feel the pressure of that?
No, it's great to have fans, and I think it's so important, and I'm very fortunate and happy to hear that I have friends fans all over the world. But you know, sometimes they ask me questions like, oh, you know, when you're gonna get back to number one and so on, and you know, it is a little bit tough, you know, you feel like you disappoint them a little, but yet, you know, they understand that if anyone wants it as much, it's me, so after all, it's just very sweet of them.
And in 2006, you won the Rogers Cup in Montreal. I think that was the biggest tournament you'd won up to that point in your career. What do you recall about that?
Oh, it was a great week for me. It was my first big tour win, and you know, beating Martina Hingis in the final, it was exceptional because I grew up watching her win Grand Slams and, you know, being number one in the world. So first of all, to have opportunity to play against her and then win, it was just so thrilling. And I remember I had so many fans and so much support. We had the final on Monday because it got rained out on over the weekend, but still, you know, I had such a great time, and it's something I will never forget.
And do you have any connection with Toronto? How much are you looking forward to coming to Toronto for the Rogers Cup this summer?
I love Toronto. I've been going there for already 3 years. I think this will be my fourth time there, and I always enjoy competing, and people are super friendly and nice, and city is great, and great shopping as well. So I'm very excited about coming there again in the summer. It's been 2 years since I've been there last.
Anna, thank you very much for being on the show today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right, there is Tom Tebbit with Anna Ivanovic, and she mentioned in the interview that she feels she disappoints people when she's always asked, when are you going to get back to number one? So we won't ask her, but we'll ask you, Tom, because she's currently 18th in the WTA rankings. Can she get back in there? We saw what Kim Clijsters can do, and I think now she's kind of been one of those competitors that can kind of prove that you can really go anywhere in the rankings, even if you're away from the game or even if you're having a slump, even though she hasn't really been slumping all too much.
Well, it's hard to say. I think that I've watched her play a few matches. We got to the semifinals in Birmingham last weekend and just watched on my computer. And she really hits the ball well still and all that stuff. But the problem she's had, I think, is right between the ears. And she's got to somehow work that out, because it's a frustrating thing to see that the game is there. She's had a few injuries, so that's been a bit of a problem. But this week, you know, she won a round and she went out to Venus in Eastbourne. And you know, it just comes and goes, but there seems to be just a frustration factor where you see her, there's a bit of a sinking feeling at time late in matches. She doesn't seem to sort of really believe. So I don't know what can be done to shake that up, because I think the goods are still there. I mean, the shots are still there. And goodness knows, people would like to see her back at the top, because she's such an appealing person and such a talented player.
Does her game focus the hard court when she does come to Toronto? Is that her strength?
I guess so, yeah, I would say so. Although she won the French Open, so that would be logical, but probably hard courts. And I think with her serve, she can do well on the grass as well.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see as Aces continues along. We'll have Matt Cronin of TennisReporters.net coming up. It's Aces right here on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. 722 on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. David Alter filling in for the vacationing Roger Lajoie, joined by Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. And Tom, our next guest, before we introduce him, we should mention that Corona, the segment of Aces, is brought to you by Corona Extra. Pick up your six packs of new Corona Extra limited edition bottles at the LCBO and the beer store. Visit findyourbeach.ca to vote for your favorite bottle. And of course, Tom, the next guest, you know, you have a personal relationship with him. You know him all too well.
I've had a Corona or two, I think, with Matt.
Very nice.
So, Matt, is that correct?
Yes, but I drank you under the table, because I think you had two and were kind of stuttering, falling, leaning backwards, crashing. But yes, we've had some Coronas. Tom, how are you?
I'm fine. Listen, Matt, this is a bit of a goofy question, but who's got more chance to win the men's singles at Wimbledon this year, an American or a Canadian?
Wow. I guess I'd still have to go with Roddick over Raonic, just because I didn't think that after his nice indoor and hard court swing that Milos's results weren't quite where I thought they should be, but I did read Daniel Nesser's quotes where he thought he could go quarters or semifinals. I just think if you push it to the end, even though Roddick hasn't done much this year or the last year and a half, that he still got the game and the experience, and he almost won in 2009. But I take Raonic over the rest of the Americans, that's for sure.
You don't think there's a chance that he could be a Boris Becker and all of a sudden, as the Brits say, come good and just have a fantastic run at Wimbledon?
Maybe if he would, maybe if he would have won last week, I'd say it's possible. Because Becker won Queens, right, and then won Wimbledon a couple weeks later in his first run there. I suppose, but he's going to have to get a little more comfortable volleying. The return game seems to have been lacking a bit. I think he's not breaking as much as he should. But for sure, if he gets in great serving rhythm, he can just about knock anyone out, with, I think, the exception of maybe Nadal and Federer.
David Alter here. You've got a book, Epic, John McEnroe, Bjorn Borg, and the Greatest Tennis Season Ever, out. And I guess tell us about the book. It's your platform to do it. But I guess the title kind of lends a question. Why? Why was that the best tennis season ever, especially for some of the newer generation like myself who really never got to live it?
Yeah, I mean, it's, a lot of it to Tom and to myself. And it's sort of when you grow up is when you're a teenager, a younger kid, or early 20s, and you're intensely following a specific sport, if there happens to be a great rivalry, I think that that's what you can relate to the most. And certainly for me, 1980, it was my senior year of high school. I was playing a lot of tennis. I was gripped by Borg and McEnroe and Connors, and then they produce two of the most dramatic matches of all time, which is 1980 Wimbledon, which Borg wins in five sets, and then McEnroe, a couple months later, comes back and takes the five-setter at the U.S. Open. But an incredible contrast in personality, sort of the mad, crazy New Yorker trying to chase the regal Swede down, two guys who played at a superior level, McEnroe a little more creative, Borg almost never missed. You had the American, you had the Swede, you had them both knocking out Connors. And I mean, David, my big argument for the book, and I won't take too long on this, is that recall that most of the Western nations, including the United States, decided to boycott the 1980 Olympics, Summer Olympics. So a lot of the attention that would have been paid to the Olympics was gone, and people were looking for something to watch because the economy wasn't in great shape either. And there you go. All of a sudden you get McEnroe almost coming out of nowhere to challenge Borg that summer, and I think that that's why it gripped the world's attention in a lot of ways.
Matt, let's just change the subject a little bit to Novak Djokovic, obviously losing in the semis to Roger at Roland Garros, a bit of a disappointment for him after those fantastic streak of 41 wins. How do you think he bounces back at Wimbledon?
Well, I think he bounces back well, Tom. I mean, he wasn't even playing that well last year at Wimbledon, and he reached the semifinals before losing to Berdych. I mean, we talked about this at Roland Garros. I thought the pressure on him was tremendous with the streak on his shoulders, not having lost, having beaten Nadal four straight times, having owned Federer this year, having most people saying, you're the best player, you're playing the best, you can beat the top two guys. This is your Grand Slam. This is your coronation. This is when you're going to be number one. And I thought that he was a little bit flat in his loss to Federer, even though Roger, I thought, played one of the best matches of his life. So I do think now he comes into Wimbledon sort of with the same thing, where he can get number one from Nadal again if he goes fairly deep in the tournament. But I think he's a little bit relieved not to be chasing this streak and to have a loss, not being looked at as invincible. With all that said, I still think he has improvements to make on grass if he's going to win the tournament.
And let's switch. Well, who are you picking for the men just briefly first?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I guess I'll have to stick with Rafa again because I just like how he looked so down the first week of the French Open mentally. I mean, he was complaining about being mentally exhausted and feeling 100 years old and all of that. And then he comes through and beats a very, very good field and wins it again. So I'm going to have to take the defending champion.
And you're a bit of an expert on women's tennis as well. Can Williams' sister win the title this year?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, I watched a little bit of Eastbourne this week, and, Venus lost today to Daniela Hantikova, but she had two solid wins there, lost a tight three-setter. I mean, Serena takes Vera Zvonareva to deep in the third set, 3 hours plus. Yeah, I do. I mean, I think it may be improbable, but if you look at the field and look at how well they can both serve, and especially Serena, if Serena can just survive the first week, get her serve clicking again, she can literally just hold serve and then win tiebreakers the entire second week. So I would definitely put her up there in the first couple for sure.
Matthew Cronin is our guest of tennisreporters.net. And actually, I wanted to ask you about, you know, the French Open kind of got a lot of people talking about Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer again, with Roger being one of the greatest, just given the amount of majors he's won. Can you call him the greatest of all time? That's still an ongoing debate, because the one guy that you can argue with, he's never really been able to dominate or beat on a consistent basis in Rafael Nadal.
Well, that's a great question, and that's the one big black mark against Roger. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he's got, you look at him title-wise, he has his 16 slams. He's won everywhere. He's won a ton of other titles. He's been in other finals. You really can't compare, for example, Pete Sampras's record to Roger's now, because I think Roger eclipses him. But then you look at Rafa and what he's doing, and Roger is not even very likely. He's definitively going to retire with a negative record against Rafa. I think he's... 8-17 now, Tom, something to that effect,
yeah,
against him. There's no way he's going to catch up unless Rafa really gets hurt. So it will be the first time in tennis history, if he's considered or called to be the greatest player of all time, you cannot find another legend who had a negative record against her primary rival. And that's what Roger's fighting against. So to me, when he retires, if Roger goes down, say, I don't know, 8-20 or 8-22, and let's say he wins one more slam, and then Rafa ends up getting to, what, 14 or 15, I think then you'll be able to make an extremely good case for Nadal being better than he is.
Matt, we had Anna Ivanovic as a guest on the first segment of the show tonight. What do you think's going on with her these days, and how much better can she get now at her age?
Wow, that's good. Yeah, Ivanovic, one of the best talkers in women's tennis history. You know, Tom, you know her, and I know her pretty well. She is a delightful, smart, interesting, charismatic person who's got a lot of game. However, I think she kind of overthinks her life and career, and that she makes rash decisions. She seems to be someone who thinks a lot, but then again, she's been through way too many coaches at this stage in her career. She cannot be going through a coach every 4 or 5 months. Whether she needs a coach or not is up to debate, but she's got to just settle down, decide what type of player she wants to be, what type of player she can be, and emphasize her weapons. I think her fitness is definitely lacking now. Even though she looks good, she doesn't have enough muscle mass on her. I think her serve's still problematic. She's got a, you know, arguably the best inside-out forehand in the women's game. She's got a very good backhand. She competes okay. What I think she needs really is a good run at a major. One good run at a major, and she's back in the top five, in my opinion.
I think that may be hoping for a lot, but I think a lot of people would be hoping for that. But just maybe a last question, Matt. Wimbledon coming up next week. You've been going for quite a few years now. What do you like about Wimbledon, and what don't you like about Wimbledon?
Well, I think I like a lot of the tradition, and there are things about the tradition that I dislike. I like that it's really treated as a tennis tournament rather than a sporting event that's just there to earn money. That I really like. I love to look at the grass. I love watching grass court tennis. I like looking at the buildings. I love the Village of Wimbledon. I think it's very classy, intimate setting. What I don't like are certain traditions that are sort of stuck in the mud, where some of the club members feel like they're more important than everyone else on the ground, including the players. That kind of tradition, just being snotty for snotty's sake, has never gone over well with me. With all that said, I look forward to it every single year, and I'm darn happy they put the roof on.
So, Matt, would you turn down a membership in the All England Club?
In exchange for what? Ivanovic getting back in the top five?
No, for you being able to have watercress sandwiches.
Maybe if they change the menu. I don't know if watercress sandwiches are enough to get... I don't know if I'd turn down a membership, but I'm never getting an offer anyway, so...
All right, well, Matthew, very much appreciate your time. Tom does as well, as per usual. And thanks again, and I hope you join us soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks,
right,
Matt.
There's Matthew Cronin of TennisReporters.net, also contributes to FoxSports.com and various other publications, and also has the book out, Epic John McEnroe, Bjorn Borg, and the Greatest Tennis Season Ever. Certainly an interesting read, especially if you want to know what the tennis rivalry of the early 80s was like, when John McEnroe first broke out to the scene, and just that fiery personality that he was and that he still is in the tennis world to this day.
Well, it's fascinating. I don't know, Nadal and Federer, McEnroe and Borg, there's certainly a lot of similarities there, and it's really hard to say one's better or worse than the other. It's a different time. There's a lot more sports going on now, so it's not quite as focused, but boy, I mean, they're both classic, and tennis is very fortunate to have had both of them.
So what we're going to do now is we're going to open up the phone lines. You can call 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, and *590 on your cell, and we will take any tennis questions you have for myself, or more importantly for Tom. Tom will probably better answer it than I could, but we'll certainly give our two cents in that, and answer any question if you want to talk about the upcoming Wimbledon tournament and who you like, or where you see one particular competitor going, or what their chances are. You can focus on the Canadians. Milos Raonic has been the huge talking point across the country. If you think he has what it takes to, you know, have that booming serve, which tends to favor the grass surface, and if he can actually use that to his advantage and get out of this little bit of a mini slump that he's involved in, or any talking point. There's a lot of Canadians in there, Rebecca Marino on the women's side, and perhaps as many as three more Canadians joining Wimbledon as well. It'll be very interesting to see after tomorrow if that can happen. But Tom, certainly, you know, Toronto, everyone looks forward to that tournament, and while everyone's excited about getting the women's, you know, with the story like Milos Raonic, it's almost like, you know, he would love to play in front of his hometown crowd of Thornhill. So much family. I'm sure they'll make the trip out to Montreal regardless.
No, it'd be great to have him here. The good thing is he'll be here next year, all things equal. So that'll be terrific. And, you know, he actually spent 2 or 3 years training in Montreal at the National Tennis Center there. So he's used to being in Montreal. He knows a lot of people there. So I'm sure he'll be very comfortable there. And the Montreal fans, I don't mean to be biased, I grew up sort of in Montreal or near Montreal, pretty passionate, and I'm sure they're really going to get behind him. So it'll be a great atmosphere this year, and I'm sure hopefully next year the Toronto fans try to trump the Montreal fans and really get behind him. So it'll be fascinating to see where he is a year from now, and coming into the tournament in Toronto.
And the coverage will be very interesting too, because for the first time, both the Toronto and Montreal events will be happening the same week, and while there are advantages and disadvantages, one of the major advantages is the fact that it can be showcased on a national level. If there's rain delays in one, you can show what's going on in another.
Well, they've got Rogers Cup, the Tennis Canada has planned it in certain ways that they think the matches in Montreal will start a bit earlier. And obviously if Raonic is in a really exciting match, and you know, there's, even if it's Sharapova probably in Toronto, then they're going to go to Raonic, and if vice versa sort of thing. So I think it's going to be handled well. It's going to be a different kind of concept, a completely innovative concept. And it's going to be fun to see what happens this summer. And the main thing is we hope all the players show up, and it'll be an exciting tournament.
So we've got a trivia question coming up in the next segment. Also, we'll be taking your calls if you want to mention one through Twitter. My handle is DavidAlter590. You can throw that along. We will take your questions in the next segment. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your cell. It is Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. 7:42 on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. David Alter filling in for Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbett, as always, for Aces. And this segment of Aces is brought to you by National Bank Financial Group. Need a smarter mortgage? All-in-one banking from National Bank gives you highly competitive mortgage rates plus a line of credit. For details, go to nbc.ca/all-in-one. And we are opening up the phone lines if you've got a question for Tom or even myself. The phone lines are open, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your cell. We've got Wimbledon coming up, so certainly that's going to be weighing on a lot of people's minds. What are the realistic expectations for someone like Milos Raonic going into a tournament where he hasn't really done well on a junior level or even on the grass surface in particular, but now with the new level of confidence he's been showing all year, perhaps, you know, this is his year to break out, Tom. It very well could happen, but we do have some callers, and let's get to them right now. Brian in Toronto, you are on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Good evening.
Good evening, guys. Just a couple of questions for Tom. Tom, I've kind of heard, you know, like some people in recent years in tennis circles, like Brad Gilbert, you know, John Wertheim, and some others suggest that a shot clock in tennis might resolve some of the issues we've had with slow and deliberate play. Like, my only concern with that is, like, for example, if a player is up against a shot clock, I mean, he may have to play through a gust of wind where ordinarily, I mean, they would have the luxury of catching the ball toss. You know, players may have to, you know, play through a disturbance in the crowd, you know, after a particularly, you know, long or grueling point. You know, generally, as it is right now, the chair umpire will be lenient and allow, you know, both players to towel off, maybe take a few extra seconds to catch their breath. But with a shot clock, you know, players may not have that extra time. And I think, you know, the net effect might be, you know, we may see more double faults. Maybe the quality of play may suffer just a little bit. What are your thoughts on that? And secondly, also, what do you think about some of the changes that have occurred at Wimbledon and the French side, say, over the last, you know, several years? Obviously, Wimbledon, they're using a different type of grass than they were in the 90s, and I think they're using a different type of ball, maybe a heavier ball as well, to slow down the conditions. And I believe this year at the French, they were using a Babolat ball, which was speeding up the conditions. You know, I suppose it's good in a way in that we're seeing fewer surface specialists, but it's bad in a way in that I think, you know, one of the great things when I was growing up watching tennis in the late 80s and 90s was I loved the differences in surfaces and, you know, the different skills that are required to succeed on each surface. But it seems to me now that the disparity between clay and grass, which were traditionally the two extremes, isn't as great as it once was?
Well, we'll go to the shot clock first. I'm a little skeptical about the shot clock just because I think it would be kind of clunky. I mean, this is in the NBA. We haven't got, you know, 24 seconds to count down, and tennis is, you know, a civilized sport, I think, in a way. I think what has to happen is that the umpires have to be maybe a little bit more strict. I was watching a match the other day with Serena, and she got a warning, and then she went up to the umpire and said, well, something changed while I was away, because usually you give me a warning at a changeover and say, you know, you're taking a little too much time. So I think that's what has to be done, that the umpire has to control a little bit. I just think it just wouldn't look good to have. It would sort of be a kind of a sideshow, a bit of a circus to have a shot clock counting down. And even now, when you have an amazing point that goes on for, say, 20, 25, 30 hits, and then the players are absolutely exhausted, the umpire's not going to say, hey, boom, 20 seconds, 25 seconds. They're going to let them have a chance to recover a little bit. So I just think the umpires can handle it. But, I mean, definitely a guy like Nadal, who I have a lot of respect for, and he's a terrific guy, he pushes a bit, and other people do push it a bit too. So it's a tricky thing. But let's keep away from sort of the gimmicks of having a shot clock. And as for the surfaces, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that you have Wimbledon sort of slowing down a bit, so you have more baseline rallies, and the French speeding up, because the French at one point was pretty boring if you just got two guys standing back and, you know, bashing the ball all day. So I don't think it's that bad. In Wimbledon, you know, when I went there a long time ago, then I started going again, I guess, around 94, and you had Ivanišević then hitting aces and Sampras hitting aces all the time, and the rallies were lasting, I don't know, 1 or 2.3 hits per point. There was no rallies at all. So I think this is sort of an improvement, but it's almost gone the other way at Wimbledon. You'd like to see, you know, like a Pat Rafter or those kind of players, like Sampras, the way he played, Tim Henman, those kind of guys, have a bit more diversity. Because even Federer, when he won, I think he served and volleyed 65% of the time when he won in 2003. And the very next year, he was staying back and only going in, say, 12 or 15%. So it's a tricky thing. But I think at Wimbledon, they've probably done the right thing. Because, boy, when Ivanišević and Sampras were just hitting aces, people were going to sleep.
All right, let's go to David in Etobicoke. David, you're on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Hi, guys. I'm going to bounce three questions off you. I hope you can answer some. Number one, who in men's or women is considered the best coach, and where are they from, in your opinion? Where do you think most of the best tennis stars seem to be coming out of? I mean, what country? And number three, I mean, I got a 9-year-old. I got a 5-year-old. How much money, let's talk brass taxes, do you think it would cost to make a tennis star?
Well, those are very good questions. The first question about the coach, I've often thought about doing a story or talking to various people about who the best coach is, because you get somebody like Paul Anacone, who coached Pete Sampras, obviously, and Sampras had a lot of success, and then he coached Tim Henman and didn't have as much. Obviously, he's involved with Federer now, but, you know, Federer is kind of a formed athlete at this point. I don't know how much difference he can make. So he was great with Pete, but when he was with Henman, wasn't that much of a change. Brad Gilbert, sort of, you know, done very well with Agassi, obviously with Roddick as well. And I mean, he's a very bright guy, very clever guy. And I just remember with Roddick, for example, Roddick was wearing a visor when he took over and was coaching him. He said, "You're not wearing a visor anymore. You're wearing a baseball cap." You know, it's just little things like that. So I don't know. I've often wanted to talk to other writers, because you can't really tell. If you have a very good player, it's easy to be a good coach. So it's a very good question. I can't give you an answer, but obviously some of those guys I mentioned are good, but I'm sure there's some other guy who's well below the radar who's terrific as well. And if he had a chance to coach a Federer or a Nadal, I mean, how good is Tony Nadal? I mean, I guess he's a genius, because Rafa's number one. So anyway, I don't want to be too long on that one. The question about the money, I think it can cost an awful lot. So, I mean, you're trying to get, if you have a child, to have a, maybe have some results at minor events, just at your local club or whatever like that, get recognized, and then maybe try to get some help through Tennis Canada and go through the Tennis Canada programs so it doesn't have to cost you an arm and a leg. I know it's tough, because I think that a lot of the players who have been developed by parents, and parents have a great influence there. So do the best you can getting them going, and then see where the chances are. And as for where the players are coming from these days, I really find that pretty fascinating, because you get a guy like Ernests Gulbis from Latvia. Why did that happen? Why did all these players come from Serbia? I think Gulbis is a real good case, because he comes from a very wealthy family. Looks like he's pretty well wasted his talent now. We don't know what will happen. As for the Serbs with Jankovic and Ivanovic and Novak Djokovic, that's hard to figure out a little bit too. But I think generally the East Europeans, the feeling is that they've come from slightly deprived background. They've got a little bit more to prove. Maybe the Americans, I suppose even Canadians, are a little bit spoiled. They don't quite have that hunger. So it's really hard to figure out, you know, where the players come from. And I don't know. I think the main thing, though, is that innate drive, that somehow feeling at the beginning of your career. There was a good story in Sports Illustrated on Novak Djokovic about how serious he was when he was just a kid, showing up the first time he played with his water bottle, his towel, all the equipment he needed. And sometimes when people said, you should maybe go to a party tonight, he says, well, what would be good and best for my tennis? Not to go to the party and go home and have a good night's sleep. So I don't know how you instill that in the kid, but it's pretty fascinating, because we obviously with Li Na winning the French Open, that's nice to see something happening in Asia. So the players come from all over the place, and it's really hard to have a hard and fast rule about, you know, why they develop and where they come from.
All right, Dave, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Well, I don't know if I can help you with your child, but good luck.
Well, one last question, if you don't mind. What is the hardest court to play on, in your opinion?
I would say probably grass, just because the grass court season is only 4 weeks a year, basically. There's another tournament in Newport, Rhode Island, so maybe 5 weeks. But you just don't get a chance to play on it very much. So most people, I guess worldwide, it would be hard courts. And in Europe and South America, and even here as well, there's a lot of clay courts, but definitely grass. Because, you could see even Sampras and Federer, the first few years they played on grass, as great as they become, Sampras winning 7 times at Wimbledon, Federer winning 6, at the very beginning they struggled. That's why I worry a little bit about Milos Raonic, although I think he has a fantastic game for grass. Just takes a little while. It's a really special surface, and you just got to get the years in playing on it. And because you only play for about a month a year on it, it's hard to sort of get the same experience you do on hard courts and on clay.
Quick mention from Twitter handle Mind the Racket. I think Serena has a legitimate chance at Wimbledon if she can make it through the first few rounds easily. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm pretty well shocked about both the way she and Venus played this week. I watched almost all of their matches on my computer, and I didn't think they'd be playing this well. I mean, Serena has not played for a year. She had the blood clots in her lungs. She had the problems with her foot. I think it's amazing. The caliber of play I've seen from them has been very impressive. I think the main obstacle may be just fitness. You know, as the matches pile up, they haven't played that much. Venus has been more injury prone than Serena, so I'm almost more skeptical about Venus, just because it seems like every tournament lately she's come up with something. But they both look great, and goodness knows we know what a determined competitor Serena is. I mean, she's just she's unbelievable out there. I mean, I think she scares other players, and when she sets her mind to something, so if she stays fit, I mean, she might be the favorite to win now. I thought Clijsters maybe may have been the favorite. Now she's pulled out, so they look awfully good. It's going to be hard to beat them, I think.
We're coming up to the end of the show. We've got the trivia question, but first we want to mention that David Gall and Bob Antonakis were the last couple of winners for the first two episodes of Aces, and they've won prize packs. And now you've got the question, Tom, for this week's trivia question.
Well, for this week's trivia question, you're going to have to go to lovemeansnothing.ca, the Tennis Canada website. And you go to Tom Tebbit's blog on Wimbledon, which hasn't started yet, but which will start on Saturday. And so you go to my blog on the lovemeansnothing.ca website. There's a mystery player there, and it's not going to be too hard, but there's a photo of a mystery player there. You have to identify that player, and then David will now tell you what you do once you have the answer.
Yeah, well, Rog will be back, so Rog will be checking his inbox. Go to roger@fan590.com. He will select the winner if you can correctly identify who that is in the picture. It's not extremely difficult, but I'm pretty sure you'll give it a shot, and you may be a lucky winner of a prize pack. Now, it will be very interesting to see what happens in the next couple of days, because we've got a very interesting Wimbledon, and a lot of eyes on Milos Raonic because of what he's accomplished this year. What advice as a tennis player, as a coach, do you do you give him to not get frustrated, given the fact that there really isn't a grass season? He's only had one ATP stop in terms of grass before going into a tournament that has very strict rules, and just the way you conduct yourself is different than any other tournament.
I think he's going to be fine. I mean, I'm surprised that people think that last week in Halle, he got to the quarterfinals, won two matches convincingly, and people are sort of saying he's not playing very well on grass. I mean, he lost to Pechner, who last year had Nadal 2-1 in the third round. I mean, he went 5 sets with Nadal, and Pechner's a very clever player, different kind of player on grass. Milos won a set, went 3 sets. I thought he played well. He got to the doubles final, so he got 4 more matches on grass. I think he's in great shape. I mean, doesn't mean he's going to do well, but I mean, he's got the game for grass. Little things I've heard from him, and he's saying he's practicing this week. He hit Federer the other day. He's sort of just getting into it easily. I mean, I think he's going to be fine. It doesn't mean he's not going to lose in the first round, but I mean, I think he could do a lot of damage. Nobody's going to want to play a guy 6'5" without that serve, and he's just getting better all the time. So it's really going to be fascinating to watch him.
All right, appreciate it. This was a lot of fun, Tom, and Roger will be back next week. This is Aces, and of course, you can catch the podcast at fan590.com. Go to lovemeansnothing.ca, where I believe you will be blogging the entire Wimbledon tourney. Am I correct?
Yes, right.
Yeah. So you can catch Tom's work at lovemeansnothing.ca. This has been Aces on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.